The Night Shift with Luke Bone and Miss Jessica. And coming up after the break, it is Rod Hanafy, the president of the National Road Freighters Association. Just quickly, g'day, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, mate.
This is a little sneak preview before I go to the break. A member of my family saw a very interesting truck on the M1 between Sydney and Newcastle last week. There was something quite distinctive about it, and I think you'll be very interested to hear what she saw. You ready? I'll tell you after I will tell you after the break. Have you got a question for our listeners this morning?
Well, mate, more to the car driving public, I want to talk about trains. Now, of course, they come up in our conversation, but we supply a lot of things for trains, and I certainly want to see people's views about how they understand the correlation between trucks and trains.
Okay, we'll talk about that and a few other things. You got a question for Rod Hanafy. He's coming up right after this, The Night Shift on Triple M.
Breaker 19, this here's a rubber duck. You got a copy on me, Big Ben? Come on. Yeah, 10-4, Big Ben, for sure, for sure. By golly, it's clean, clear to Flagtown. Come on. Yeah, it's a big 10-4 there, Big Ben. Yeah, we definitely got the front door, good buddy. Mercy sakes alive, looks like we've got us a convoy.
Rod Hanafy is the president of the National Road Freighters Association. He joins us every Tuesday here on The Night Shift. And he's made today no exception. Hello, buddy.
Good morning, mate. How are you?
We've only got, I think, about four more chats until the Christmas break.
What break?
You're not breaking? You don't stop?
Not normally, no. You normally get Christmas Day home, and I'm normally back on the road Boxing Day, and the same with New Year. And, of course, the way things are going at the moment, I think that's likely to be the same at this stage.
Can I ask this, and this isn't what I wanted to talk about, and I know you wanted to talk about trains, but what your average truckie or truckette, what sort of holidays do they get?
Look, a lot of them don't get a lot of holidays at all, particularly if you're an owner-driver. You're out there on the road the whole time. You never stop. Depending on whether you've got a contract with a particular company, you might find that they have a break over Christmas, and that's often the only break you get. But if you work for All and Sundry, very rare is the time that you get to have time off, because you're talking a substantial loss of income. Of course, if you own a truck, you're the bugger that's got to drive it, and it's you've still got to make the payments even if you're having a holiday. So It does put a lot of stress on families and that as well.
Do the big trucking companies, though, the major employers, do they look after their people?
They do, because they have the capacity to do so. They've got enough drivers to allow a bloke to have time off. And I'm not saying I've never had holidays. I'm pretty keen, and you know, I've got a truck that's out there to promote the industry. So I've got something a little bit different. But the big ones certainly have the capacity, and no, blokes won't stay in the job, of course, if they're not going to get any holidays, mate.
For many years,
yes.
When I worked at another radio network, for the first 10 years in a row, I worked on Christmas Day.
Yep.
And I worked at the Exodus Foundation. I don't know if you know where that is. It's Liverpool Road at Ashfield. The Reverend Bill Cruz runs it. It's called the Loaves and Fishes Restaurant. Anyway, for 10 years in a row, I did an outside broadcast from the Exodus Foundation on Christmas Day. And one thing I did notice was the trucks were still on the roads.
Yep.
There were still taxi drivers. Well, you need taxi drivers on Christmas Day.
Yes.
Yes, the traffic was a lot less, but there's still people who have to work.
Essential services, mate, nurses mm-hmm. and doctors, mm-hmm. you know, they're there to look after people in those situations. And unfortunately, like, you know, people still expect their stuff delivered. And because of their just-in-time lifestyle now, you know, everything's got to turn up just on time to be in the shop, and milk, you know, that's got to be there every day, and all those sorts of things that people rely on as essentials to their life.
Got to get there.
It's delivered every day.
It's got to get there. 133353. Does your trucking company give you holidays? Do you get a break? I'd be very, very keen to know. Are you an owner driver? Can you afford to give yourself a break? Do you go away on holidays? How much family time do you actually get being a truckie? I'd really like to hear, Rod. 133353. Just before you jump into your rant for the morning, can I tell you something that a member of my family saw?
Absolutely.
They were driving between Newcastle and Sydney on the M1, and they were behind the truck, and on the back of the truck was a big TV screen, like a larger than larger widescreen TV.
Yep.
On that TV was the camera that was on the bonnet of the truck. So the people behind the truck could see what the driver could see. And she said it was the most brilliant idea she'd ever seen. So you knew when it was going to be safe to overtake, but it actually gave the people behind the truck vision, the vision of what the driver could see in the cab. Is that a rare thing, or is this going to be more and more more common, Rod Hanafy?
Well, mate, it is unique in Australia at the moment. I've seen it overseas, and they had, you know, virtually the whole back of the truck was the size of the screen. Now, there's two things to it. Of course, that's not going to be a cheap screen. And two, how's it going to work when you go to unload and all those sorts of things? And how is it going to cope with our roads? Now, it's one thing to have it on a major highway like that, and the intent is genuine. And, mate, I've got to say, many, many years ago when I drove fuel tankers, they're not quite the same as a big taut liner where they're tall and way above the traffic. But the tankers that I had control of was the first set that ever had the stop, brake and indicator lights at the top of the tanker. And, of course, I went to my boss and I said, well, I want to put these up there. And he said, why? And I said, well, you know, occasionally you will see a truck that has stop tail indicators on the top. Now, if you're driving along in traffic and you've got a little bit of sense and you look way ahead, you operate defensive driving, you will be looking way ahead of what's going on directly in front of you. And, of course, with a truck, as you say, your vision gets impeded by them. They're a big thing. But if you've got those stop tail and indicator lights up high on them, they are well above the line of traffic. And you can be seeing a truck 15 or 20 vehicles in front that is on the brakes because of those lights, and you know that he's braking way in front of you, and you can anticipate and slow down. And mine was the first tanker that was ever done with it, and now a lot of them are done like that. And I've been commented, I've got quite big ones on the truck I drive because the little ones don't stand out enough. But it's a similar thing to give you an option to see ahead, don't you?
Where have you pulled over tonight? Your phone's just gone funny.
I'm in Brisbane in the depot.
Okay, and it's come back now. It's just something that she was telling me about, and I thought, that's interesting. She said, talk to Rod about it, and so I have.
I have seen it, mate, and it will be interesting to see whether it takes off here.
Yeah, big screen on the back of the truck, and on that screen was the footage of the camera pointing forward from the cabin. So basically, the traffic behind was able to see what the driver saw. She said, what a great idea. Anyway, there you go, 133353. You want to talk to Rod Hanafy. You can get through now. Rod, what is it with trains? What's the problem?
Well, mate, it's not a problem. At one stage, we had 27 rail gauges in Australia. You wonder how any government could allow something like that to happen. And, of course, trains supply a service. You've only got to look at how successfully and how well they do that in America. Their intercontinental services over there. Have you ever seen the trains with the double-stacked containers on them, Luke?
Yeah, I think I have.
Yeah, and it's something that we haven't been able to do here except to go to Perth. So we've got a long way to catch up, and they supply service to those really long-haul runs. But when people talk about trucks on radio, specifically, and we're talking about inland rail and those sorts of things, you know, they're saying that they're going to take all the trucks off the road because inland rail is going to solve all these problems. Now, by the time Inland Rail operates, myself as a truck driver is going to want the bloody rail to actually take some of the trucks off the road, because is there going to be that many of us on the highway trying to keep up with the needs of Australians? But when people hear about it, they just say, put all the freight on trains. Now, of course, that's a marvellous concept. And yes, in certain applications, trains do a really good job. But they don't understand that the freight still has to get onto the train.
That's right.
You've still got to have the trucks to deliver it to a depot. Mm. Now, if you don't live on the railway line, you live 100 kilometres off, then how's it going to get from the railway line? And can you imagine what they're talking about, trains 1.2 and 1.5 kilometres long in this inland rail? Can you imagine that pulling up at every corner store?
No.
It's not going to happen.
No.
So people have to understand the logistics of it. And, mate, I was in a depot in Toowoomba this morning, and a bloke said to me, he said, oh, I said, have you ever seen $1 million load? I said, no, why? Because I looked at his truck and it had
know, some things sitting on the back, look like sort of railway sleepers, actually.
Yes.
And he said, well, that's what that is. He said, these are trial sleepers that have been made out of this special material. And that's it. You never know what's on the truck. And some of those loads can be worth an absolute what's a mate if people don't recognise the responsibility we hold, not only in the value of the truck and the trailers, but the loads we deliver as well.
Yeah, well, it's something that I've learned over the last couple of years. Rod Hanafy is the president of the National Road Freighters Association. How's your Nature B going? You're still taking two every day?
Yes, mate, yes, carrier with me in the truck now. I've spent I've only had 2 or 3 days home in the last 6 weeks. We've been that busy and we're not even at Christmas yet. So carry some with me in the truck, mate. I've got to take it of a morning, two a day. So
that's
I'm trying to use it up. And you know what it's like living in the truck. It's damn hard to get good food.
So Nature B. And Rod's taking it. I've been taking it 21 years and you should be taking it too. Power pollen. Energy, vitamins, in fact, 27 vitamins and aminos, 28 minerals, all supporting your energy levels, looking after your immune defences. 6 months supply, $129.95 plus delivery. You'll get 1 month supply for free if you order now, plus the honey pollen soaps. It's power pollen. It will power you up. It does it naturally. It's a natural food. It is not a drug. It is not a medicine. But boy, oh boy, does it deliver energy and it delivers a better night's sleep. And if it doesn't do all of this, you get your money back. Give it a go. Powerpollen.com.au. I swear by it. 21 years I've been on Power Pollen now. Two little capsules every day. And I've raised my whole family on it. Powerpollen.com.au. Rod, we'll take some calls after this, eh? What do you reckon?
Will do.
The Night Shift on Triple M. Anyone else out there seen this truck with the big TV screen on the back? How many of them are there running around, I wonder? If you are a truck driver that has the screen on the back, how much does it cost? How reliable is it? How does it affect you opening the doors and getting things in and out? It's a very good idea, but I don't know much about it. And Rod, you sort of don't know that much either.
It was sponsored, the one that I saw, by obviously one of the large electronics manufacturers, as you might imagine.
Yeah, right.
Samyang or whatever it is. Yeah. So, and for them to do it as a promotional thing, obviously for their screens, show how good they are and the like. But you can imagine backing into a dock, Luke, or something like that. It's a big screen and mounting it. They're not the lightest thing. And I'm sure that you've seen enormous screens at events and things like that, and they get transported around the country on big trucks. But to mount one there, and gee, some of the roads in Western Queensland, mate, you wouldn't be able to keep it on here, I don't think. I'd be really concerned about how it's going to survive.
You might have drivers behind the truck wishing that they put a movie on.
Yeah. Well, in the scary side of things, of course, because we're up in trucks and you can see down into cars, we know that there are people that do really silly things in cars, and some of the things that they do is watch movies and read books. I was going southbound on the Hume in the rain one night, so not the best conditions to be driving in, and I looked down, and here is a fellow reading a book, and he wasn't looking at a picture book or a comic. He was reading a novel.
How do you do that?
On the steering wheel doing 110 in the rain.
Jeez.
And then I actually called up and I said, is there any coppers on channel? And some bloke had a go at me. And he said, oh, wait, what are you picking on him for? I said, mate, what happens when he runs into your family and they die? Like, you know, there's got to be some balance. We are responsible for a truck worth nearly $1 million. And there's a load of freight that was worth $1 million and sometimes way over that. And we have to act professionally. It is our job. It's our lifestyle. And yet we cannot get the authorities to recognise the road as our workplace.
I remember years ago, before I was on this network, I don't know how it came up. I think it was a story. It was a news story of the day where a car ran up the back of another car. And the car in front was an SUV. And on behind the driver and the driver's passenger side headrests were TV screens, right?
Yes, for the kids, yep.
But they weren't kids in the back seat; they were adults.
Ah.
And what they were watching was certainly, it wasn't...
Not for kids either.
It wasn't Toy Story, but there was a toy.
No.
There was a toy involved, apparently. And anyway...
the car following got involved in the story as well getting rather, yes.
Well, wanted to get closer to see what
was going on.
To get a better look at the action.
Yes.
And there was an accident involved. Do you remember hearing about that?
Oh, no. I didn't hear about that one.
It's a true story. Anyway, 133353. I once did a segment for truck drivers. What have you seen?
Yes.
In the cars from your vantage point? And some of the stories are unbelievable. I'd like to hear from them again. 133353. Just before we go to calls, story in the Courier Mail yesterday. Speaking of cameras up high, more than 1,500 motorists have been caught on their mobile phones, 278 others for not wearing seatbelts. This is the first week, Rod, that the new cameras went live. Transport and Main Roads Minister Mark Bailey said there were 57 drivers caught two or more times in the first 4 days, meaning a dozen a day facing losing their licences. These are these new hidden cameras. They're up high, and the photos they take, some of them are a bit ambiguous. There was one person who was fighting it. He said he was clearly having a drink from a drink bottle, and they claimed it was a telephone that he was on. But anyway, there you are.
Well, someone sent me a photo yesterday, speaking of the M1, mate, between Sydney and Newcastle. I believe that some of the overpasses, I think there's four sets being put up on those overpasses. And, you know, whilst you can see now, I'm sure you've seen the mobile speed camera on the side of the road with this yellow trailer and this thing sticking up in the middle of nowhere. Like, they do stand out a little bit. You've got to be, surely, if you don't see that, there's something wrong. But to put them up on overpasses and on the back of signs, people aren't going to be quite so aware, and they're not going to be as easily seen. So we know the value of seatbelts. They certainly save you. Look, one of the things in our industry years and years ago, you understand, of course, in a car that the seat is fixed and you move with the car. That's fine. But because of the impact of the road into trucks, most of the trucks are air suspended. But the seatbelt used to be mounted at the top of the B pillar. And as you went down, the seat would compress. You'd compress the air in the seat. Mm-hmm. But then as you sort of hit a bump, you'd come up. Mm-hmm. And the seatbelt used to lock and try and break your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, a lot of drivers said, well, this is no good. You know, I'm getting bashed about by the belt because of the movement. Now the seatbelt is part of the seat. The whole thing moves up and down together. And then it's strapped and secured below that again. But many years ago, that was one of the truckies that they wouldn't wear seatbelts. And, of course, the thing was, the bloke that survived an accident by not having the seatbelt on told everybody.
Yeah.
The trouble is, the bloke that didn't get that chance.
That's interesting stuff. Listen, we've got a stack of people who want to have a talk to you. We'll do it after the break. It's Rod Hanafy Day. It's Tuesday, November 23. Rod is here for a short time this morning, 133353. We'll come back and we'll take some calls. Swiftgrow is having a Black Friday. Did your Swiftgrow arrive?
Mate, yes, it did. And of course, I was away so much I missed the gap in the middle, but I've been out and hit him again and see how we go.
Got to give it, because you have very harsh soil at Dubbo, and I'm very keen to hear how this Swiftgrow affects your, what have you got, roses and a few things? So,
fruit trees and a lot of azaleas.
Okay. Oh, okay. Look, you're going to love it. Swiftgrow, they're having a Black Friday sale. Swiftgrow is the living fertilizer that restores the soil's natural microbial activity. It brings soils back to life. Swiftgrow, here is the deal. Buy now. You get one Swiftgrow, one Swiftfort. You get the second of each for free. It's half price. It ends next Tuesday. Order at swiftgrow.com.au. Free delivery anywhere in Australia. Let's go. Let's talk to Rod Hanafy, 133353. G'day, Danny.
How you doing, bud?
We're very, very good. Like, Rod, are you okay? Can I speak for you?
Oh, you certainly, mate.
What's up, Danny?
Oh, not a lot. I'm just an interstate truck driver myself. So I was just, I was ringing up for the Christmas holidays for starters.
Yeah, what do you get, any?
Not really. I tend to work for small to medium-sized companies, not the big ones. So they normally give you a time frame, so they might say you can't take holidays between start of December to the start of January or whatever like that. So you'll just have your main days if you can get in time, and that's pretty much it, really. So, yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the wages and how they're not paying for deliveries and pickups a lot of these medium-sized companies anymore.
Rod, are you listening to this?
Yeah.
Yeah, Rod, your phone's gone off. Can you move to the left?
I am. Yep. Hang on. How's that?
Are you on loudspeaker?
No, I just had to go to that special little room.
Okay, he's right now. Okay, Danny, Rod's listening. Go ahead.
Yep, the other thing I wanted to talk about was the fact that a lot of these medium-sized and small-sized companies aren't paying for pickups and deliveries and all that sort of gear. So some of them, you know, you're working 6-8 hours just doing your pickups and deliveries, and then you're then driving to Sydney or whatever. So you're really only getting paid for the drive, not for the time you spend unloading and loading and all that sort of gear.
And the way that was set up by some, as you suggest, is that they said, oh, that's included in the kilometre rate. You know, that's included in all those drops. That's not the case. Well, that's not the case. That's not how it's supposed to work. The award, the interstate award, is meant to be, yes, you get paid, but you can be paid by the kilometre from one city to the other. But then under the award, technically, as soon as you enter that capital city, then you're supposed to be paid hourly rate for everything else you do within the city.
Right.
Now, there's very few pay that way, but then it is up to the driver to say, you know, you've got to pay me, because we're a very demanding, we're very in demand at the moment.
Well, I've been in the industry for like 30 years, and the one thing that I had was this last mob that I just worked for, I jumped up and down about the wages and about the fact that they weren't paying it. They actually made me redundant like a couple of months later. And I actually went through Fair Work. It's the only time I've ever done it. Went to Fair Work. Fair Work basically asked them what was going on. They turned around and said, no, our drivers don't do anything for unloading and loading. And they took their word for it. And that was it. They're not interested.
Of course, one of the things I've suggested to drivers is keeping a diary to protect yourself.
Well, I actually did that. They just said it's handwritten, we're not interested. Not enough evidence.
I'm surprised at that, mate. Sorry to hear that.
I've just got a bit fed up with it, you know what I mean? So I've now got a company that I went to, and I just said to them, that's it. If you're not going to pay deliveries and pickups, mate, I'm not doing it. So it's got to that point now. But, at the end of the day, it's these drivers working 18-hour days and getting paid for 10, you know, basically, if they're only getting paid for their kilometres.
I've said in the past, mate, it's not about paying us more money, it's about paying us for what we do.
That's exactly right, you know. So I don't really understand how they're getting away with it this day and age. It just seems bizarre to me that every other industry, if someone was to jump up and down, then they're onto it, but they're not onto it for truck drivers.
And part of that problem is because we are so diverse. Now, if you're a nurse and you work in a hospital, if you're a bloke and you work in a supermarket, you're there every day, you've got the boss in front of you, they can't do without you. Because what our job was more a lifestyle over the many years, you know, you got into it, and once diesel gets in your blood, you can't get it out, and you can't really go and change careers. And of course, they can't. We don't get together. It's one of the things we've asked, mate. About, I think there's 200,000 truck drivers in Australia, and probably 5,000 are in associations. And those associations then struggle to get things improved for us because we can't agree on what we want and put it to the government and get treated fairly.
Yeah, you haven't got one voice. You've got a lot of little voices.
Yeah, well, it gets a bit, you know, much after a while. As I said, I've been in the industry for 30 years. And so, like, some of them, they think if they give you a big flash truck, that you'll just be happy with that, and that's it. That's what they do. They give you a brand new, you know, Kenworth or whatever with all the bling on it, and they think, well, that's it, mate. You'll be happy in that, and you'll be rather drive that. I mean, I've got kids, you know. I wouldn't recommend now for my kids to get into the industry. Just wouldn't do it.
So, and you're not alone.
No. So at the end of the day, I'd rather my kids go off and do something else. That's going to be a problem in another 10 or 15 years.
It's already a problem. It's already a problem.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it, really.
Look, good call, Danny. Thank you for your time. And, look, I hope you get some time off over Christmas, will you? No.
Yeah, I'll probably get the main days, I reckon. I'm not sure with this mob because I only just started with them. The one thing that this mob are doing that I've never had before, they're actually, for the next month, they're actually paying an extra 5 cents a K rather than paying a bonus, they're just giving everybody for an extra 5 cents a K for the month.
What does that add up to in the month?
Probably an extra $1,000 a month. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Danny, thank you. And please call back again.
Right, no worries. All right. Have a good one.
We want every now and then we want to hear the Danny report, okay? Good on you, Danny. Thanks for that. 133353. If you get a fine being a truckie, don't put it off. Do not wait until the sheriff is at your door. Talk to the team at Highway Advocates. They help truckies avoid fines. They help truckies avoid demerit points and convictions. Highway Advocates, they can appear on your behalf in any court, anywhere in Australia. And don't worry, they have an easy payment plan. You don't get slugged with a huge bill. Find out more. Highwayadvocates.com.au. Rob and Adam will be with me on Thursday morning at this time. You get a question for Highway Advocates ringing on Thursday. Highwayadvocates.com.au. They are there for you. 133353. If you want to get through to talk to Rod Hanafy. Jeff, good day.
Yeah, good day, Luke. Good day, Rod. How are you, man?
Good, mate. Self?
As the interstater.
Yes, yes. I knew who it was.
Yeah, it was. I just read this article I meant to ring you about over the last couple of weeks, Rod, since I've seen it, where the NTC backed down over truck driver working hours reduction.
Yes.
And the NTC, the Nat Roads, think it's a win for the industry because they've maintained the 72-hour working week. And even though it should have been reduced to 60 hours a week, and even that would I personally think it should be 10 hours a night, 5 nights a week, 50 hours a week, but it's probably at 60 hours would be you'd still be able to survive the industry, I think. But 72 hours, week in, week out, Luke Boner, a man of your caliber would think that that's excessive, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would, Rod.
And, yeah, so the NTC is the National Transport Commission. And currently we've spoken, Luke, over time of the review of the heavy vehicle national law. Now, we've complained, as you've just spoken about Highway Advocates, about the unreal penalties, the way that we're treated and those things. We've all contributed, a lot of drivers have contributed to this review, and many of the points raised were valid and justified. And what's happened is the NTC, depending on where you sit in this argument, has now come out and said, oh, we're going to look at tinkering with the hours, not fixing the problems, but tinkering with the amount of hours they drive. And they've come and put out a proposal that drivers could only work 60 hours a week. And as Jeff says, at the moment, you're allowed to work 72 hours a week. And there's all these rules that we've discussed and where you can get knocked off for it. Now, the industry and one of the industry associations came out strongly against that reduction, saying it would affect our wages. And you've just heard me say, it's not about paying us more money, it's about paying us for what we do. And there was also a view from some that at the moment, any driver can go and get a truck license and that afternoon be put in a B-double and sent to Sydney without any fatigue training. Now, if you operate trucks in Western Australia, you can't operate a truck without having done some basic fatigue training. And we are talking about blokes driving big rigs on the road overnight. And there was a view that perhaps we needed to reduce the hours for those coming into the industry so that they had some more experience before they did that. Maybe in the years gone past, where our mate said, you brought your kids in, they worked in the depot, they drove the ute and the forklift and the truck, and you worked your way up into bigger trucks. Now that doesn't happen. And there's so many views on this, and it's certainly got a hell of an airing in industry press. And at this stage, they've immediately backed down.
See, Luke, what Rod said previously
is
that truck drivers are loath to become association members of a driver association. So all we're left with is the National Employers Association, as in the Australian Trucking Association. And Nat Roads, which is, again, an employer-based association.
Would most truckies belong to the TWU?
No, very few.
Very few. What about the National Road Freighters Association, of which Rod is the president? Rod?
Again, not enough. And the reason that many aren't in the union works well if you work in a major capital city and you've got a depot. you can get to the boss, you can get the union rep out. They don't represent interstate line haul people because they simply can't get to us and we can't get to them. And in years gone by, there was a requirement that if you went to Fred's Building Supplies, you had to be a member. And if you weren't a member, they a lot of blokes have, you know, long and fond, or I shouldn't say fond, but long and serious memories of being forced into something that they didn't want to do. Then, of course, the union didn't represent them after making them join. And many of them have bad memories of that.
Well, as I've said before to you, Rod, and Danny, you may have heard, pardon me, Jeff, you may have heard this. When I first started this program with Rod, I said, okay, well, let's get Tony Sheldon from the TWU on. He can answer some questions. And Rod, so many truckies said to me, you put that bloke on the air, I'll switch you off. And now he's a politician.
Look, yeah. If you want to know the answer to every single facet of safety and fatigue and every facet of the industry that needs to be changed for the better, it comes down to one improvable issue, and that is we have to make the kilometre rate illegal in this country. It's been for decades illegal.
The kilometre rate illegal.
We have to make the kilometre rate illegal. Get every truck driver in any aspect of this industry paid by the hour.
Paid by the hour and not by
exactly. To get rid of it.
Yeah. Well, look, just what I've learned, Jeff, doing this program with Rod. You know, you can go to a DC. And it's not your fault that you had to, either because of traffic or an accident or because you just had to sleep, you turn up an hour late and they say, sorry, we can't help you today, or go to the back of the line. We might see you in 5 or 6 hours. And while you're sitting there, you're not being paid.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Now, Jeff, it's not a great line, but you got your point across magnificently. Thank you for your call. Good on you, Jeff. Now, Jeff, ring back. But just tonight, it wasn't a good line. Rod Hanafy is with us. 133353 is the phone number. You want to talk to Rod? I'm very keen to hear about truckies, truckettes and their holidays. What sort of break do you get? How good is your boss? And do you go along with Jeff the Interstater? Is the truckie being paid per kilometre? Should it be made illegal? Should all truckies be paid by the hour? Is that a fairer form of pay? 133353, the night shift on Triple M. The night shift on the Triple M network with Luke Bone and Rod Hanafy is with us. G'day, Dino.
How are you, mate? G'day, Rod.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Good, mate. Just regarding to the last caller's, like his aspects on the hourly and the kilometre rate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think you've got to look at the bigger picture here, because if we go on kilometre, on hourly instead of kilometre.
Hourly, yeah.
So you're getting paid 56 cents a kilometre, right?
Yep.
And these other blokes want to turn around and only pay you, like say, the award be 24, 25 bucks an hour.
Right.
If you look at the big picture, like a lot of these big companies now, they've got a lot of blokes doing changeovers and depot to depot runs without touching the loads, which yes. I understand, which I've run road trains for couple of years now. Now, I understand, like, with the hourly hire, like, what it should be is you get paid the kilometre from, like, say, from your depot to where you're going to unload, and then you go on hourly hire from there.
And that's what the award is, yes.
Yeah, yes.
But sorry, Dean, just so that I understand, are you saying that on some in some occasions being paid per kilometre can be better for the driver than per hour?
Yes, depending on what you're doing. Like, if you're only doing changeovers, you're actually up around the $50 an hour to $55 an hour. But if you're like an owner driver, or you get held up at DCs for all those hours, so then you're only dropped back to about $12, maybe $15 an hour, if you're lucky.
The average trucking, Rod Hanafy, is paid what an hour?
It depends on the truck you drive, Luke. There is a graduated pay system that starts at a small truck and works its way up. I think there's about 7 or 8 classes under the award. And then, of course, there's an award in each state, and they vary as well. So it's not simple to say how to do it. There is an argument for both. And, yes, if you're only doing a trip where you jump in the truck, you drive from A to B, you get out of the truck or you do a changeover and you go back, for that kilometre rate, you can do well. The problem is, as the three callers back said, he gets paid kilometre rate, but then gets nothing for the deliveries. Now, every one of those companies we go to either pick up or deliver, you imagine those staff get paid for the hours they work, don't they?
Yeah.
They don't come and say, well, you know, we're only going to pay you 2 hours, but we want you here for 10 hours today. And the way the industry works, unfortunately, is a lot of the time when jobs are priced, okay, we price it to pick it up here and deliver it there. You might be lucky to have a local bloke go and pick it up for you. That's fine. But the smaller companies have to do those pickups themselves. Then they can't compete. And then they expect drivers, as in Mate's example, to do that work virtually for nothing. And yet they earn to carry the freight from A to B. And it's been an argument for many, many years, and we haven't resolved it yet.
Okay, let's talk about a smaller truck that's delivering bread that goes from a bakery, but then goes to a number of different supermarkets.
Yep.
So that bloke delivering that bread picks it up at the bakery or at the DC?
Well, he picks it up at the bakery. They were talking about bread. Let's go with that example. And that depends. See, that's, again, if he works for one of the majors, he's quite likely to get paid hourly rate. If he works 8 hours, he gets paid 8 hours. If he works more than that, he gets overtime. But if he works for one of these companies that has gone out and sought to win that contract and make money out of it, then they offer that driver a set rate. Righto, mate, we're going to pay you so much a day and you've got to do 100 deliveries, might be 150, depending on where he operates and how far he travels. And they then go and price the work. They take the work off the company that was paying everybody hourly rate.
Mm.
Then they offer it out as a contract.
Do you remember 4 years ago, Rod, we did the story on the tip top drivers?
Yep. Yep. And that's exactly what I'm saying, Luke. There are those out there who will undercut and then offer you less because they can get away with it the way that it is structured. And then, of course, you know, you look at the courier industry. Some of them get paid so much to do a job and they work for a major company. Then they're offered piecemeal rates. Then some of them are told, here's your delivery. You've got to get that done in so many hours. And if you don't, we're going to fine you or you're not going to have a job.
Dean?
Yeah. Earlier we were talking, Luke, about young fellow. He asked about the COVID jab, about asking for ID.
Yeah, that was a good call, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was actually heading from Cobar to Rockhampton in the road train, and I can't remember the name of the town now, but it's up between Lightning Ridge and St. George on the border.
Where's that, right?
And the young lady, senior constable, actually came to me, asked for my, my test, my negative result.
Yeah.
Asked for my COVIDs, my jabs, which I've had both of them, and also asked for my licence, and I said my licence. Goes, yeah, well, how am I supposed to know who you are, mate?
Mm.
Well,
that makes sense. Yeah, my first call this morning, Rod, was a bloke called Shane, and he just wanted to mention that, you know, he's got his COVID vaccination certificate on his phone, like I have, and he said he's flashed it to get here, there, and everywhere. Not once has he been asked for his ID.
To say that it's his.
He could be holding anyone's phone.
Yeah, although, see, to get over the border in Queensland at the moment, we've got to produce three things. You have to produce a permit, and they always say, I want the one with your name on it to prove that it's the permit.
Yeah.
Then you've got to produce a negative test result. So that's on your phone. You've got to show them that you've got a negative test result for COVID in the last 7 days. So, again, that goes to your phone. But then, yes, you've also got to show your vaccination certificate. And I've got a little tag from when I got mine done. I've got it on the phone as well. It's a bit hard to read. And I know some blokes have been challenged. And, mate, I did see a comment today somewhere about a truck driver who's been stuck in a motel because wherever he went, they didn't understand the freight protocols. And I must follow that up for next week to see whether that's accurate and genuine. Because if that's the case, as per usual, we're the ones that have to live with it when someone else comes up and puts all these rules on us.
Yeah. Hey, Dean, thanks for your call.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good night.
No, thank you. Also, Rod, something you could chase up for me out of interest. We've heard since the whole COVID drama about a number of people being smuggled from New South Wales into Queensland in trucks. There was one just a couple of weeks ago where there was somebody actually in the cabin and they were discovered at the border. Can you find out what happened to the driver? Mate, well, I've got to take a break. We'll come back and talk more after the break. Can we do that, Rod?
Can do.
Thank you. Rod Hanafy. Rod Hanafy is with us. He's the president of the National Road Freighters Association. You got a question for Rod? He's only here for a short time. I've got to take a quick break, but we'll come back and talk some more. The Night Shift on Triple M.